Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
All right, good morning. Happy Tuesday. Bill Ryder with you. What is going on? Remember that whole can't wait for 2021 thing? Feels like the whole world's a Cubs fan. We meant 2022. That's what we meant. We are, by the way, coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Rocket Mortgage is giving away $2.5 million in prizes during Super Bowl 55, which is just around the corner. That could be used to buy your dream home. See rules and enter for free today at rocketmortgagesquares.com. I'm going to get back in about 20 minutes. I'm excited. I'm like a crazy person with a mania, drunk on the idea of the Chiefs dominating the Bucks. I want to get back to whether I can tease the should. I know I can. Vegas is smiling. You can do it. Whether I should tease the Chiefs to minus 15. And we'll get a little, I'll get a little advice from Will Brinson on that front. And we'll talk a bunch of stuff from around the NFL with Will, CBS Sports NFL writer, the very talented host of the Pick Six podcast. In an hour, we're going to do Buy or Sell with Tom DiBenedetto. Little change today, by the way. Little change in the process. I've been doing radio 5 days a week only for about, I guess, 5 years. I guess how long I've been doing this thing. My first producer, when I was in L.A., would call in sick even when he showed up every day for work. So that was an interesting process. My next producer, Adam Klug, now program director, he would not show up when there was fog. That is a fact. Oh, it's a fog day. Can't make it in. Do your car not work? No, just a fog day. Stuart Kovacs, who then produced me, would call in sick 96 hours before his shift. So it was amazing his psychic predictions that his cold was going to overpower him 6 days later. And Tom DiBenedetto doesn't come to work when there's, 14 feet of snow in New York City. So it's a process. Everybody's got their standards. So Connor Green on the board in the city in Manhattan. He is the Lone Ranger of CBS Sports Radio today. He braved it. Sources say he came in on his skis. So appreciate him. And Tom will be, you'll hear him. Tom's still producing from his house, dancing from what looks like a very bright living room, mixing some paintings. There's a plant and a lot of white painted walls. Oh, I guess there are some paintings. I just couldn't make them out. So Tom will be here for Buy or Sell, producer underscore Tom. Andrew Bogish will have you on updates. So I want to give just fans in general some advice. And I'm speaking particularly to the woman in Atlanta who LeBron James, with a few laughing face emojis, later labeled courtside Karen. She was real mad, I believe, as LeBron put it. If you missed this, LeBron James had an altercation with somebody, little words back and forth. There are fans at a few NBA arenas, including in Atlanta, very, very, very limited number of people. Someone was courtside. They got into it, and a woman came to her man's defense. Here is a level of advice I feel like I can give. The intersection of confrontation, for me, check. Sports, check. And a real joy in drinking alcohol, which can impact judgment, impair judgment, check. Do not combine those things. They're separate deals. You want to get confrontational? You got to be sober. You want to do some sports things? Maybe you can mix in a little fandom, but you can't go to an arena, drink your wine, and get in LeBron James' face. Courtside Karen, you got to chill. And I'm not even gonna say her name. I am not in any way saying that this woman who, literally before she got out of the arena, thought to get on the Instagram, to get on the video, I'm not saying that she is seeking and clawing desperately for any ounce of attention she can find, that her 15 seconds satiates whatever incredible darkness and hole and emptiness exists in her life. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying for some people, that's certainly true. And just in case she passes into that territory, not going to share her name. I am going to say this, though. It's funny, and we're going to play the clip here in a second. But I'm going to say this. And this woman, to me, epitomizes one of the most frustrating things about 2020 and now 2021. We are all suspended in some bizarro alternate universe. We are all limited in the things that we're able to do. Vacation, time with family. I haven't seen my parents in a year. You two, you've been through it. These are the fans that get to go back first. I understand you got to let some fans in. But in a world where screening has become the norm, can we just screen for personality as well? Just for a little bit of likability? For a little bit to behave? I'll tell you this about LeBron James. I actually have an experience, a first-person experience, with sitting courtside with LeBron talking some serious smack. When I covered LeBron James, and the point of the story is going to be this. I'll give you the punchline now. When you sit courtside, when you have that kind of access to those kind of athletes, either because you're really wealthy, you spent more than you should have, or in my case, you're a reporter who finagled your way into hanging out with some owners, you have to understand and accept that you are 4 feet from these guys, but you don't actually live in their world. It's like the old line from the Michael Keaton, The Paper movie. You cover them, you're around them, but you're not one of them. The rules are different. I don't care what LeBron did or didn't say to the husband, did or didn't say to the woman. The dude's competing for a living. Sit there, as Bill Cosby, I know I shouldn't quote him, but still he had some quotes. Sit there. Actually, it was Eddie Murphy. I can do that. Drink your Coke, have a smile, and shut up. That is the rule. That is the deal when you're that close. When I was covering LeBron his first year in Miami, and I was a pretty intense columnist in those days. I was you think I'm intense here towards some of the people I criticize? I was viciously accurate in print every day. I wrote about LeBron James 7 days a week. And on the rare days where I wrote about someone other than LeBron, I still wrote about LeBron. I just write two columns. And I would say that of the, I don't know, whatever that the math is on October 25th to July 1st every day, all but three of them were just LeBron, critical LeBron columns. And LeBron was not a big fan of mine, and the Heat were not big fans of mine, and that was fairly well known. LeBron didn't talk to me, but he certainly would glare at me, right? And I was able to, at an away game for the Miami Heat in Sacramento, when the Maloofs, who are awesome, still on the team, get a hold of him, introduce myself, want to do a little story on him, went up to their suite, I don't know, 3 hours before the game. No one's in the arena. And the matriarch of that family, the mom, for whatever reason, liked me. And next thing I knew, I was invited to sit courtside with the two Maloofs brothers, which is the only time I've ever done that, action on the floor, and it was amazing. And LeBron got into it with, I think it was Gavin, with one of the Maloofs, and they went back and forth, and they talked smack, and there were F-bombs, and there were, as my kids would say, there were burns, Dad, sick burns! And I turned to one of the Maloofs. I'm like, hey, man, is everything all right? He's like, oh, yeah, this is LeBron's our buddy. That's part of the deal. That's part of the culture. That's part of the nature of it. These players are talking smack to each other on a level that would make some grown men cry. If you can't take it, courtside Karen, sit down, have a Coke, smile, and shut the hell up. My favorite part of that, though, is about halfway through the second quarter, LeBron looked at whoever the Maloofs, who's this short, random Bigfro dude that the Maloofs are sitting with? It was me, and it's the only time in my life I've ever made a superstar like LeBron James mid-game just do a stop in his tracks as the game went on and stare at me like I'd broken out of some alternate universe because he was not a fan. It was just 3 feet from me, huh? Come on, courtside, Karen, you're better than this. So, all right, all that to tell you, this is a... So what happened is the woman gets in LeBron's face. There's some swear words. She takes her mask down. Now, to be fair to LeBron, he said afterwards, she wasn't so close that it's an issue. That wasn't the take of Frank Vogel, Anthony Davis, Montrezl Harrell, most of the people on that team. You can't be screaming at people with your mask off in a COVID-19 reality, especially if that guy's LeBron James, and even a fractional opportunity or possibility of infection could lead to that guy sitting out. I thought LeBron was pretty reasonable post-game. I'm not even going to play the sound because it's long and he's being diplomatic. This, though, is courtside Karen 13 seconds after being asked to leave the arena in Atlanta.
Just got kicked out of the game for talking to LeBron James, for talking to husband. So, I'm minding my own business, and Chris has been a Hawks fan forever. He's been watching the games for 10 years, whatever. He has this issue with LeBron. I don't have an issue with LeBron. I don't give a about LeBron. Anyway, I'm minding my own business, drinking my wine, having fun. All of a sudden, LeBron says something to my husband. And I see this and I go, I stand up and go, don't talk to my husband. And he looks at me and he goes, sit the down, bitch. And I go, don't call me a bitch.
Okay. You get the idea. I'm sitting there minding my own business, drinking my wine. It's not a salon. It's not a spa. She wasn't getting a massage. It wasn't taking your turn, dude. I mean, come on. What do you mean you're minding your own business? I had no problem with LeBron. I do have problems saying the words without the slurs. I mean, come on, lady. Get out of here. All right. I didn't want to open on that. I wanted to talk about LeBron James MVP race, and I'll do that here for a few minutes. But I just had to get that off my chest. Look, have a good time. Go to the games. Have fun. Talk smack. But please, for the love of all that is holy, keep your mask on and understand the rare gift for those that get to do it, that is the ability to attend a sporting event. And maybe I'm sensitive, may not be the word. I'm particularly attuned to how lucky I am and how much I've taken that for granted in my career, because normally I'd be at the Super Bowl right now and you would be hearing the really ugly sound of background noise presented as access as we rolled in guest after guest after guest. We would have gone to Media Day yesterday and we'll play some sound from it. It was really tamped down and much more of a surgical and therefore boring conversation with the particulars, Tom Brady and Patrick Mahomes, than the circus that it's become. I'm sure more pleasant for those guys and minus the silliness. I do want to make this point, though, about LeBron James, you know, the actual game itself and the MVP award. And in years past in the NBA, I've had a vote for MVP and all those other things. And there are some signs to indicate I will have a vote again, because I am voting. I got a note, got an email from the NBA a couple days ago. I will be voting for the All-Star game this year. This year, 50% fan vote in terms of who the All-Stars are, 25% player vote, 25% media vote. And so maybe we can do that together, give you an opportunity over the next few weeks to call in, make your case, and I'll certainly take it into consideration. Doesn't mean I'll have an MVP vote at the end of the year, but it certainly looks like I will. And I've been riding pretty aggressively the last few years for LeBron James to be the MVP. I would have made a strong case for him last year. Don't know that I would have voted for him. I certainly think LeBron was robbed a few years ago when we were on the air doing this program in the evenings when Russell Westbrook got a triple-double that at the time, and you can find the tape, I was pretty adamant, this is ridiculous. If you dive into the stats, it doesn't make sense. His numbers are inflationary. You've got a pace of play increase that made things like a triple-double not as significant as it was 10, 15, certainly 30 years ago. And you had both Westbrook and Harden at the forefront of usage rates going to one guy. So if you've got 20% more possessions per game than you did 5 years earlier, and you've got the ball in your hands 42% of the time instead of 22% of the time, and you've got guys like Steven Adams being required because you're mean to him, it looks like, to my untrained or maybe trained eye, tipping you 5 rebounds a game, Russell Westbrook, maybe the triple-double isn't a real thing. And everybody shouted me down, thought I was being ridiculous. I didn't have a vote that year, first year in a long time, which is probably good. I would have voted for LeBron over Westbrook and over Harden. And what you're seeing now, and if I can cite the worldwide leader, that's sarcasm, folks, the good folks in Bristol, there is an overwhelming, I don't know if you've noticed it, an overwhelming, and it feels like concerted effort, a narrative to give LeBron James the MVP right now. There are viral videos from NBA reporters that I like and respect. There are articles being written. There are narrative being pushed across their television network. You shouldn't be watching it. CBS Sports HQ is markedly better, and the worldwide leader hasn't been a leader in the world or in sports in a long time. But nonetheless, like if that's sort of the habit you get into, you've seen it. And I was trying to make sense of why this push for LeBron to be the MVP. And I think LeBron's amazing. He's the best player on the face of the earth. There have been many cases the last 2 years he should have been the MVP. It's just not this year. The guy's at 25-8-8. It's incredible. But you've got a guy in Jokic who's at 27-12-9. Embiid's at 28-11 and shooting 40% from the three-point line. It's just, not to get too geeky on stats, but Embiid and Jokic, the big men obviously in Philly and Denver, are both at the top of player efficiency ratings this year. They're approaching where Giannis was last year, was the all-time high. And one thing about PER, kind of a geeky analytics number, is it doesn't take in a significant way defense into account. It's largely an offensive stat. Except Embiid's an amazing defensive player, a defensive player of the year, caliber player. 2, 3, 4, 1, somewhere in that range. And Jokic has been really good defensively this year. Here's another fun fact for Joel Embiid. Philly this year is 0-4 without him. 0-4 when he hasn't played. When he has played, including that COVID game where I think it was Embiid, I think Connor was on the, I think Connor had to suit up, I think Tom was in there, it was a bunch of randos. Philly won that game. 15-2 with Embiid. He's been incredible. Trying to figure out what is it about LeBron that requires ESPN to push the narrative now. And I realized it is the past mistakes of those voters coming back to haunt them. It is not having the courage 2 years ago, 5 years ago, maybe 10 years ago when Derrick Rose got that award. I voted for Derrick Rose and I voted for Steph Curry twice. I don't regret either vote, but I understand where people would. It is the past mistakes, or what feels like the past mistakes of voters, the lack of courage back then to do what was, at least in a few cases, the right thing, creating a scenario where they don't have the courage this time around. If the vote were to end today, there's a long ways to go, not having the courage to finally pass over LeBron. You can't make up for past mistakes by trying to correct something like an MVP vote today. It becomes a domino effect. One of the reasons, I'm telling you one of the reasons, LeBron James hasn't won as many MVP awards as he should have, it's because a bunch of voters felt guilty from the Jordan years, those that carried over, they didn't give Jordan enough. Jordan didn't win nearly as many as he should have. We can't rush and give LeBron James a bunch. And so now they're playing catch up all over again. And the truth is, many of the times that LeBron James has lost out to someone in an MVP award, that MVP vote that people like me have been honored to be able to cast, it curdles in our hands. It turns to dust way too quickly. Derrick Rose wins the MVP a few years later. He's a shell of himself. He'll be the only MVP in the history of the NBA not to make the Hall of Fame. You give it to Steph Curry, and he gets dominated by LeBron of a sort in a 3-1 series collapse for the Warriors because Draymond Green gets hurt. You give it to Giannis Antetokounmpo twice, and the guy can't even make an NBA Finals as LeBron coasts his way to another shot at a championship. And so it goes, and so it goes. So I'll just say this. Courtside Karen took a lot of wind out of our sails because, you know, wine plus poor Chris having his dignity threatened when a grown man talks back to him. Plus, I can be on Instagram and have people talk about me equal too much time focused on her and her silliness. ESPN, my friends at ESPN, I'm not going to name you, even though some of you haven't done me that courtesy in reverse when I've broken stories that didn't fit your worldwide narrative. Slow down on LeBron James as the MVP award winner. A, it's February. B, there are two guys ahead of him. And three, ESPN, if we have to recorrect everything that we think about and how we vote based on your past mistakes, we're never going to get anything right because it's just going to keep going. All right, 855-212-4CBS is the phone number. Talk some Super Bowl 55, take some calls, hang out, maybe even see if Tom is able to, survive the next few days buried in the snow. It's all happening next here on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
All right, welcome back into the show. Happy Tuesday. It is weird the different universe you exist in Los Angeles. I'm a kid from Iowa, spent most of my life in the Midwest. But you just, everything becomes normal. Like I told this story on the air a few weeks ago when I flew to Cleveland once, assuming that it was 55 or 60 degrees there in the winter, not remembering that winter was a thing, and landed to sub-zero temperatures and no clothes. The guys are buried in snow. Buried in snow. Tom is home today working from home, 17 inches of snow in Manhattan, Central Park over the last 24 hours. It's a little more reasonable, and by a little more reasonable, I mean it's reasonable, than the Stuart Kovacs 96-hour call-in sick play or the Adam Klug fog call-in. Andrew Bogish, what is the most aggressive you've ever called in sick to work? Back in the days where you actually had to physically attend your workplace.
What do you mean aggressive? Like the longest I was out sick?
So Adam Klug once didn't come to work because there was fog, and that went over really well in the newsroom. Your boy, Kluger. And
not Stuart anything.
No, say whatever you want. This is your show, bro. Stuart Kovacs, to my annoyance, used to call in sick like 96, 4 days. I think I'm getting a cold. I don't think I'll be in on Thursday. Really? Maybe mix in some vitamin C over the next 5 days? And then he would, like clockwork, wouldn't be there. Those felt aggressive. Bold.
Yeah. So I've been working mornings and like early mornings for, I don't even know now, more than a decade, because I was doing it before I came to CBS and then continued to do it at CBS. So I've had to be at times, I guess, aggressive, because me waking up at 3:30 in the morning going, oh, I don't feel like I can't go in, is a disaster for everyone else, because there's no one to come get me and replace me at 3:30 in the morning. So there have been times where...
Wouldn't act just happily come in early? Wouldn't act just happily come in early?
So there have been times where I did not feel well the day before, said I should take a sick day, and then woke up feeling able to have gone to work. So, like, I don't know if that counts for you. I also had, like, the non-bad version of pink eye, which, like, doesn't it just, you literally have a pink eye? Because I guess you can, there's two ways. It's bacteria or the virus. The virus is the gross one where, like, your eye crusts over and you can give it to everyone. The bacterial one, you just literally have a pink eye, but it's no problem. So, but I had to stay away for 2 days because I could give it to other people. So I was home for 2 days feeling completely fine, playing video games, watching TV. It was like a 2 vacation days, but I was technically sick. But other than that, I really got nothing for you.
In related news, I feel the Stuart Kovacs psychic powers. I feel the good pink eye coming on. Well, I guess it doesn't really help me. I sit in a studio by myself in LA. I guess that doesn't.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess that doesn't really. I mean, it's. Can you imagine if LeBron James called in sick? If LeBron was just like, you know, there's fog, and I just couldn't make it to Staples. I mean, just the Brentwood Hills are covered in fog, and I really feel the flu coming on. I won't be there for the Clippers game in 2 weeks. So just if you guys want to prepare accordingly. Bogus, I need some advice. I actually dreamt about last night. I dreamt about making homemade pasta, which is weird, but that's where I'm at in my life. And I did, and I dreamt about teasing the Chiefs to minus 15. It is clearly on my brain. I want to do it so badly. Do you want to do it with me? Do you want to get on this crazy gravy train?
I mean, again, like I said yesterday, to close of the show, I am tempted, even though the smaller number makes less sense. Like, this should not be anything I want to do when I was hesitant at 7. But, like, minus 13, minus 14, I might want to do that, yeah.
All right, we need to, what is your comfort zone in terms of gambling amounts? Like, 2 grand? That's too much for me. Do you want to go two grand and I'll go 200?
How about, what did you say yesterday? 500 for me, 1 for you? I think that's good.
You think that's the range?
Yeah, that's a better ratio.
You big better. You beautiful big better, you. It's because you got the whisper phone. Have you ever had a confrontation with a professional athlete? I was thinking about courtside Karen. And I don't think I've, I'm trying to think of, I've never lost my, I've been screamed at by a lot of athletes. I've been messed with by a bunch of athletes, which is cool, which is part of the deal. I don't think I've ever lost my temper with an athlete the way that courtside Karen did.
No, I mean, look at me. I can't lose my temper with anyone because I would then lose the subsequent altercation. So that's never happened.
But if you got punched by like a famous coach, like if Coach K went from being your best friend to punching you in the face, dude, retirement city. Settle out of court, NDA, right? Litigious America.
That would be good. I'd take a punch to the face from Coach K to be able to cash out for the rest of my life.
How much, what is the minimum amount of money that you would take for Mike Tyson to have one free shot at you as hard as he could punch you in the face?
No, that's too dangerous now. Now we're talking about possibly harming myself. Like Coach K, I think I could survive a Coach K punch, but not someone whose job it is to punch people. No, thank you.
No, you'd be Stu from The Hangover. I mean, that's who you would be if you're lucky. So you wouldn't, $10 million, you wouldn't
no.
take a punch. Oh,
no.
I would.
Because like quality of my health is more important.
Oh, I'm in. My kids and wife, like, take care for life. I'm not very smart anyway.
What about you, though?
It's going to affect me. I would take $10 million from Mike Tyson. And I've met Mike Tyson. Charming, frightening man.
Like, yeah.
Nice guy, but I would not want to be punched in the face at all. At all by Mike Tyson. What about LeBron James? LeBron James gets one punch at you. Big guy, but not a trained fighter.
He's a linebacker.
And he's huge.
Yeah.
I actually was at an event in Akron once with him where he was unveiling. It was really cool. He spent a bunch of money at his alma mater, that Catholic, I think it's a Catholic school in Akron, Ohio, to give them a bunch of new football equipment. And I had an interview with him, and I went behind the stage. I have a photo somewhere. I look like, if I were blue, I'd be a Smurf. I look like Frodo the Hobbit. And I'm in I'm in clothes. I can't believe FS1 put me on the air in these clothes. Like, there was like an inflection point where they thought it was really funny that I looked like a dork. I think they thought it was an act. I know this is how I dress. And then they started to dress me. So it was just before that transition. And LeBron came out in the football gear to talk. And it is a frightening thing to see LeBron James in pads and the whole football setup, because he looks huge like that. He would have been the best tight end of all time. I'm going to make that statement. Goodbye, Travis Kelce.
Yeah, so he's not punching me.
Not for $1 million.
Definitely not $1 million.
A million?
All right. Definitely not a million.
I think my bid would be $2.3 million, and I'm in. Have you been punched in the... I've been punched in the face. You'll heal.
I've been punched by my brother. That's it.
You've never been in a fight?
Nope.
Oh, we got to fix that. Would your wife get mad at you if you got in a fight for the show?
I think she would, yeah.
Really?
But okay. Now we're power ranking vices, because now we're talking about gambling, drinking all night, and getting into a fight. So I'm not sure where the trade-off with her would be.
It all comes together.
But no, she would not approve of a fight.
You drink enough, you won't feel it. We go gambling to get your adrenaline going. Then a listener of the show agrees to fight you but not hurt you too badly. And we open source this thing. We open source it. I'll do it for $500. Actually, I won't. There are people who would happily punch me for more. Let's do an update. What's can I guess? Can I guess the updates? Ready? Can I guess what's going to happen?
What's going to happen? Yeah,
how I do.
Go ahead.
I'm going to go some NBA drama on the court, some NBA drama off the court, the New York Mets cultural excellence, and with a former manager, and something from the Super Bowl.
Well, you've got the stories right, maybe not the correct order. We'll start with baseball and Angels pitching coach Mickey Callaway, the latest facing allegations of inappropriate behavior. 5 female media members tell The Athletic that Callaway sent unsolicited and lewd texts, messages, and emails to them. They included shirtless photos of himself and requests for nude photos in return. The allegations span the last 5 years, when Callaway was also the Mets manager and Cleveland's pitching coach. Those two teams say they didn't know about this until now. The Angels are investigating. The Rockies and Cardinals finished off... Hold on, whisper phone. The Rockies and Cardinals finished off the Nolan Arenado trade last night. Colorado also sending some money to St. Louis while getting lefty Austin Gomber and 4 minor leaguers. Arenado maintains opt-outs after 22 and 23 while adding 27 to his current contract. Now to the NBA and LeBron and the Lakers winning in Atlanta last night, 107-99, finishing off a road trip at 5-2. LeBron and that couple sitting courtside exchanging words in the fourth quarter, with the couple eventually led off the floor.
I don't feel like it was warranted to be kicked out. There was a back and forth between two grown men, and we said our piece, he said his piece, I said my piece. And then when someone else jumped into it and said their piece.
That someone else is the man's wife, who says LeBron called her the B word after she defended her husband. LeBron was not asked about that specific allegation during his post-game availability. The Grizzlies ran over the Spurs last night, 133-102, extending their win streak to 7. The Rockets scored 48 points on 11 threes in the first quarter in OKC. They beat the Thunder 136-106, and the Bucks hammered the Blazers 134-106. The Pistons expected to play tonight in Utah after not playing last night in Denver. That game postponed just before tip-off because of a reported COVID positive or inconclusive result among the Piston players. The Chiefs placed receiver DeMarcus Robinson and backup center Daniel Kilgore on their COVID list yesterday. They reportedly closed contacts of a barber the team brought into their facility on Sunday. The man tested negative the 5 preceding days, but a rapid result test came back positive as he was cutting Kilgore's hair. The players will not practice this week, but could play Sunday as long as they keep testing negative. College hoops, number 13 Texas Tech cooled off ninth-ranked Oklahoma 57-52. The Sooners had won 5 in a row, the last 3 against top 10 teams. And in the NHL, the Capitals losing in regulation for the first time this season. They led 3-0. They lost 5-3 to the Bruins. Bill, back to you.
Andrew Bogus, two thoughts off your update. One... And maybe LeBron used the B word. I find that I'm incredulous. I find that really hard to believe, having covered him and how incredibly conscious he is of his image and aware of the people around him. I don't doubt that he might use that term if he thought nobody was around. Maybe. I just find it really hard to believe that he would say that in an empty arena where a mic can pick up anything.
And they did pick up some things, because I did watch one of those video breakdowns this morning, and they caught him calling the dude something.
Right.
Like steroid something or other, but I did not hear him talk to her.
And secondly, and we talked about this a little bit yesterday, but just I don't know if you have any, some breaking news happened yesterday with the network. Mark Chernoff, legendary program director of WFAN, our boss here at CBS Sports Radio, amazing boss. I've worked for bad ones, so I appreciate the great ones, is retiring in the coming months. Do you feel like you have the best Chernoff invitation on the show? Would that be Tom? Like, I don't want you to do it. Because I think maybe a call from Chernoff at the, you know, late on the show would be, if you wanted to do it, if you wanted to be that guy, I don't know.
Yeah. No, I'm gonna pass. I'm gonna defer to Tom on this.
I think his
is better. Plus, Tom didn't make it into the studio this morning, so I feel like there should be some kind of punishment for that, and maybe doing a Chernoff phone call would be the correct punishment for that.
I don't think that's a terrible idea. It's interesting, because Tom yesterday on the way home was like, look, I'm going to make it in. If I have to drive my car, I'm going to drive in. Don't worry about it. I'm like, okay, whatever, bro. I don't care. He's like, I'm going to drive in. I'm like, okay. And this morning, hey, man, it hasn't snowed here in like 12 hours, but I can't make it. The path is closed down. So maybe the Chernoff, maybe the bridge between those statements is the Chernoff imitation. You think that's the move? I thought Tom's good at it.
It sounds good to me. I'd sign up for that. Anything
and he could call
me.
In. He also can't defend himself because he doesn't have a microphone right now. I can see him with a look of happiness. And I'm really good at reading people. And the read I have is, this is a great idea. In 45 minutes, I want to be Chernoff.
He does look excited.
Seems like that's happening. Andrew Bogus, see you in an hour, buddy. Andrew defers a lot. All right, buddy. I feel like, hey, do you want to do this? No, I'm good. All right. At Andrew Bogus on Twitter. We'll have maybe Tom will be, you know, do a little imitation. And all jokes aside, I hope he does. You know this, whatever you do from living, you got to appreciate the bosses you have who treat you with respect and are great at their jobs. And I'm going to miss Mark a ton, you know, whenever he is no longer here. It's in the coming months. We don't have the details. But just a legend, literally the program director in American Sports Talk Radio, just a legendary guy, and someone I don't want to speak for Mark Chernoff, but I think who would very much want Andrew Bogus to take a punch from Mike Tyson for the show. 855-212-4CBS if you want to give us a call. I want to play you some sound from a very tamped down, a very low key media day tomorrow. Yesterday, we'll do that next. Not tomorrow. It's not time travel. Next. Here on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
Happy Tuesday. Such a weird Super Bowl week. I for a big chunk of my sports media, sports writing career, I never went to a Super Bowl because I worked at the Kansas City Star and the Chiefs never won playoff games when I was there. They did not win a single playoff game over the time that I think I even lived there when I moved on to a national job at FoxSports.com. 2000 and... I'm trying to remember. 2004 or 5 to 2012. A year away in Miami. And the first time that I got to go... I can't remember which one was the first. It might have been Patriots-Colts. No, excuse me. Patriots-Giants in Indianapolis. It was this eye-opening experience. It was this amazing, amazing thing. And over time, like anyone who gets spoiled, I took for granted that experience. The joys of Radio Row, it's really fun. You see a bunch of old friends and colleagues. It's like a reunion. The easy access to athletes. I mean, a couple years ago, we had Patrick Mahomes as he got elevated, Alex Smith as he got traded, Kirk Cousins as he got paid a whole bunch of money. The contract came after Radio Row, if memory serves, that almost $90 million in guaranteed money that really changed the way the economics of the NFL work. And over time, I just got tired of the circus. I just did. Because when you're trying to do your job at Media Day, it's a little annoying, the people that dress in furs and have drums and some of the folks, men and women alike, who dress in such a provocative way that it would make the ladies of the red light district of Amsterdam blush. It's not a media event. It's a circus. And this year, there's none of that. There's technically a radio row. There's a few local folks from Kansas City and Tampa Bay there. And you could just hear in some of the answers the calm and the oddity of things not being odd for those players and folks involved who have been through Super Bowls. And for the Bucks, there's the added advantage. This is a home. We've never had a home Super Bowl before. A Super Bowl where a team makes the big game at their home stadium. And it's probably not a huge, I don't think it's a huge advantage on the field given the limited capacity. But as Tom pointed out, producer underscore Tom, the executive producer of the show, Tom DiBenedetto, sleeping in your bed, going through your habits, those things can have an impact. And yesterday, at a Zoom-style, low-key media day, Tom Brady explained and talked about why for him, he's obviously been through a bunch of these, this is the easiest Super Bowl prep he's been through.
I think the football preparation has been easier. There's definitely, you know, in a lot of ways, you know, actually my family's been out of town for the last 6 days. They're not coming back in town until Saturday. So I really had an empty house for, will be 12 days leading up to the game. That's the most prep I've ever had. Could really focus on what I need to do from a football standpoint, have time to get my body right. There's been no travel for our team where it's a home game. That's very different. We stay at our own home. That's very different. You don't have to eat hotel food for a week. That's very different. The stadium will be, I don't know, 25,000 people. That'll be different. So a lot of the non-football stuff I'd say is entirely different.
He sounds frighteningly calm, doesn't he? Just frighteningly, my body's fine. I'm eating my food. And the thing about Tom Brady is with most athletes, an answer like that, frankly, wouldn't give a damn, my dear, right? You just wouldn't. But Brady's an old man. He is, even if he doesn't play like it on a regular basis. And his body being right is a really significant factor. You know, if Mahomes were coming off a serious injury, but we thought he could play, the state of his body would be a major, major storyline. If Tyreek Hill had missed the last five games and were just cleared for the Super Bowl, the state of his body would be a major, major story. Tom Brady is basically an injured guy day to day at 43 years old. We just don't appreciate that or think about that because he continues to defy the boundaries of time and age for a football player, for a quarterback in a way that makes us, myself certainly included, not appreciate that every week his body is one of the great, he's battling the opposing team. He's battling whatever plan his offensive coordinator and he and Arians have come up with and the counterpoint from the defense they're facing, but he's battling his body. I don't want to say first and foremost, but as an equal adversary. And for him to be at his house and in his bed, that's a real deal. And Brady's also, I don't want to use the word weirdo because I know that's derogatory. I don't intend it to be, although it is a little weird, even if it's not meant to be derogatory. He's a bit of a weirdo with his diet and some of the ways that he treats his body. And well, I don't know if, and by the way, Djokovic in tennis is like this. LeBron treats his body like a temple, but in a way that's a little more mainstream. I don't know if the athletes who obsess and go these very unique, bizarre, different routes are incredibly ahead of the curve in terms of health, maybe. I don't know if they've just tapped into something that's just specific to their particular bodies, maybe. Or my guess that it's in some way psychosomatic, that the rigid, obsessive focus that they've adopted is almost like a zen-like mental reality for them, that they are prioritizing their sport, their game, you know, sacrifice for the greater good of winning football games, basketball games, tennis matches, whatever it is. Regardless, Brady's a weirdo about what he puts in his body, and so the ability, it's not like he's Andy Reid. It's like, oh, it's a different kind of cheeseburger I got to eat today, so I guess that throws me a little bit because I'm used to, you know, I mean, Brady's looking for, I don't know, eucalyptus leaves and, you know, the right kind of bamboo shoot soaked in salt water or whatever the holy hell he's eating. So I think it's going to make a difference. What I think is going to offset whatever advantages Tampa Bay has, and I think they will be offset. I probably shouldn't tease Kansas City to minus 15 just to get to almost 5-1. because Brady, all the things you just heard, but Patrick Mahomes has lost to Tom Brady in an AFC Championship game in which he out-battled Brady in the second half and met him blow for blow and only lost a couple years ago that game because they lost a coin flip in overtime at Arrowhead. That's an experience that brings in both that rare combination of hunger against Brady in particular and an utter lack of fear at facing him in particular. I think that's not an advantage over Brady, but it's enough of a reality that I think it offsets Brady being at home. And Mahomes has been in and won a Super Bowl. And you're going to hear this clip here where he talks about, I mean, Patrick Mahomes is going to talk to you about a Super Bowl with more confidence in what that feels like than Aaron Rodgers, because Rodgers hasn't done it in a decade. Think about that. And a host of other guys. So here's Mahomes yesterday on the differences from last year's Super Bowl to this year's Super Bowl.
It's very different. Obviously, just sitting in the empty room and not at the even in the city of the Super Bowl. It's a unique experience. I'm sure Tom has a few more experiences than I do. But from last year to this year, definitely a different experience. You kind of get in the routine as a football player of you come to the building, you go watch film in this room, you go to practice. Yeah. You go off the practice, you go back and watch film with these groups of people and at this certain area. And to have that kind of routine stay the same is definitely something that I think will help us go out there and play better even than we did last year.
Here's something frightening to think about. If Patrick Mahomes is still competing playing football when he is Tom Brady's age, and that is possible, Tom Brady will be watching it in his 60s. Tom Brady will be in his 60s when Mahomes gets to the age that Brady's at. Think about that. Gronk's not Shakespeare. He's not, you know, he ain't King Lear. But I'm going to play you this just because his voice makes me laugh. Here it is.
We knew the Super Bowl was at our home stadium all year, but no one ever hyped it up. Like, it was like when the conversation happened, it was like, yeah, man, like, yeah, that would be dope. Like, you know, the Super Bowl's at our home stadium. Like, that's never been done before. But no, it was never like overhyped within like the locker room, within the guys.
I like how serious Gronk is when he gets a fact, right? He's like Braveheart. He's just so, we knew that we were going to host at our stadium. Okay, cool. I don't want to sound like a pirate. I was in Beverly Hills once hanging out after a TV shoot, and it was like late. I mean, late for LA. LA shuts down really early in a way New York City doesn't. It was midnight or 12:30, and we're walking out. We'd all been drinking and getting our Ubers, and there was four or five guys across the street just screaming and hooping and hollering. Ah, super obnoxious drunk people. I'm like, who are these? Oh, it's Gronk. I mean, Gronk partied so much when he was in the little retirement phase, one of them, that like and I remember telling this story to people in LA. Oh, yeah, I've seen Gronk out drinking too. Oh, yeah, in Beverly Hills? Nah, man, Palisades. I love this guy. Good time, Gronk. All right, and then lastly, again, not a lot of craziness out of the Super Bowl, a lot of chill, but Andy Reid understands that the focus for him, the priority, the goal, what he's aiming for is another cheeseburger.
Is there another cheeseburger waiting for you?
There is, Mariano. Yes, I'm going to go. I need a double cheeseburger if that happens. I appreciate that part.
Yeah, Mariano, you crushed that question, bro. Not many guys have the guts to go with the cheeseburger question. I'm glad we got a little bit of the silliness in there. I know what I'm about to say is football blasphemy. And I'm not going to go in the way that some other people have done to get attention. I just think Mahomes has a massive advantage in this game over Tom Brady. He doesn't have more experience, obviously. But Brady has summoned everything he can to be the best version of himself that he can be at 43. And he's really good. He's really good. He is better than Manning was when Manning was more leader than gunslinger when he won that Super Bowl in Denver, by far. But he's not Mahomes. I mean, Mahomes is still, I think, exploring the limits of his powers. Mahomes is a superhero who hasn't gotten his arms around exactly what he can do. And anyone they play, I think Mahomes is going to bring it. But we've seen a lack of focus sometimes from the Chiefs. Just they're so sure they're going to win. I don't think Mahomes, in particular, is going to make that mistake against a Tom Brady-led team. God, I think the Chiefs are going to crush him. Also got, you know, all I have to do is beat the 3.5 to win a bunch of money. So maybe I'm getting a little too overconfident. All right, I'm gonna turn my overconfidence over to Will Brinson. I'm gonna see if my colleague at CBS Sports thinks I've lost my mind. He probably has. I don't know if we've ever agreed on a bet ever. We're going to see from Will what he sees in Super Bowl 55 and whether teasing the Chiefs to minus 15 is madness or brilliance or both. Will Brinson up next here on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
All right, welcome back into the program. Bill Ryder with you. Thanks for listening. We're coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Rocket Mortgage is giving away $2.5 million in prizes during Super Bowl 55 that could be used to buy your dream home. See rules and enter for free today at rocketmortgagesquares.com. All right, I've got some gambling dilemmas. I've got some questions about the Super Bowl. So there's nobody better to welcome onto the program than our friend Will Brinson. You can read him at CBS Sports. Listen to him on his daily NFL podcast, the Pick Six Pod, on Twitter. It's really easy to find him at Will Brinson. Hello, Mr. Brinson.
Bill, what's going on, buddy? Hope you're doing well in this extremely unusual Super Bowl week. He said from the confines of what apparently is math class instead of Tampa, Florida.
I wanted to ask you, you've been to a million of these things, and you're always incredibly busy when you go to them. Are you missing the festivities, or are you relieved not to be in that tornado of silliness this week?
Yeah, I mean, a little bit of both. I don't think there's a whole lot going on just in terms of, you know, what the media is getting to do. I mean, we've got our CBS Sports HQ set up, of course. Like Pete and Danny and Brady and Jamie Eisenberg are there. Doing the analysis stuff. But, I mean, it looks like it's pretty cold. I think it's like 45, 50 degrees all day in Tampa, which is, you know, not ideal if you're going to Florida. And, you know, I think just based on what my understanding of it is that sort of the protocols that we have in place, you know, for company-wide and then, you know, for how the NFL wants people to operate during the week is that, you know, if you're in the media, you're going to work and then you're going back to the hotel. And there's not a whole lot of stuff in between. So, I mean, if I'm going to choose between being with my loving family, who are probably listening to me, and being in a hotel for a week by myself, I guess I'll take my family.
Will Brinson here on the show. All right, Will, help me out. So here's my gambling situation. I need you to tell me if I'm just insane or I'm brilliantly insane. I have been in this year-long, season-long against the spread league where if you win the whole thing, you make the playoffs, you win the whole thing, you can win up to 10 grand. There's two of us left. So if I get this pick right, and I'm on Chiefs minus 3.5, if I get the Chiefs right, and I can change it, but I'm going with the Chiefs, I will either win $10,000 or $5,000, depending if the other guy that I'm tied with after this entire season also takes Kansas City. But I want to act, I'm so sure the Chiefs are going to dominate the Bucs. I want to tease the Chiefs. And I thought about doing like teasing them to 6.5 or 7. But if I tease them to 15, I can get 5-1. Brilliant or burning, setting my money on fire?
Wait. So you're saying you're doing a pleaser, or you're going the other way?
So my 3.5 Chiefs minus 3.5 is for basically $10,000. Maybe it's for 5. Depends on this other guy.
Right.
So it feels like I've got house money.
Hold on. So like there's only two guys left in the con. Two guys can win.
Yes.
And it comes down to the final pick. So
yes.
if you both pick Chiefs and you won't know that, then you'll like, in other words, like you're going to win at minimum $5,000, right?
If the Chiefs cover.
Okay. Gotcha.
So I'm thinking about on top of that, separate from that, taking a sizable chunk and teasing the Chiefs. And as I look at the number, my eyes are gravitating to Chiefs minus 15 at 5-1.
Okay, so I mean, I'll tell you this. I don't hate that at 5-1. I think there is a pathway. I was doing we recorded a podcast a little while ago that'll be up in the morning with Brady Quinn, where we sort of broke down the X's and O's. And I think that if you're gonna bet on something like that where you're taking a large point spread and you're expecting a blowout, I mean, I think the team that you would need to take is the Chiefs, because I don't think you can blow out Kansas City. And yeah, I'm a little hesitant on it because I think it's tough to blow out Tom Brady. But, you know, as Brady and I were sort of talking through this, you know, there's a we've seen the Buccaneers, they sort of got lucky against the Packers in terms of Green Bay not coming out of the gates hot, and they converted a bunch of third downs early. I think it's really possible that they come out and do run pass, don't convert early possessions. The Chiefs come out looking really sharp, and the Chiefs have been sharp early. You know, the Chiefs have looked sharp early in games. Mecole Hardman had that fumble against the Bills on the punt return. That's the only reason they got down 9-0. And then they just went to that blitzkrieg in the second quarter. I mean, I think it's very possible the Chiefs get a 14-point lead going into half. And at that point, you know, you never want to count out Tom Brady because Lord knows we've seen him, what he can do in Super Bowls. But I think the way the Chiefs' defense is built with Chris Jones and Frank Clark, who have shown up in a big way in a Super Bowl, you know, just a year ago, and then with Tyrann Mathieu being able to, you know, just be super aggressive when teams are chasing points against the Chiefs, I think there is a path for a potential blowout. I think it's probably unlikely just because, you know, the Bucs have a ton of weapons and can chunk the ball deep and will keep trying to chunk the ball. But, yeah, I mean, I think if Kansas City won by two touchdowns, I wouldn't be shocked. One of the things, and I pointed this out to Brady, is that, you know, we saw what the Chiefs have played two playoff games, right? One, they played against the Browns, and the Browns had the ball with a chance to win, but do the Chiefs win that game by 15-plus points if Patrick Mahomes is healthy the whole game? Probably. And then the other, they played a great Bills team and absolutely obliterated them and just cruise control to a victory. So it's very possible that we're somehow, Bill, underrating the Chiefs as we head into the Super Bowl.
Will Brinson here on the program as a former editor of mine at the Democrat Gazette in Little Rock, Arkansas, once said, "He's singing my song." I love everything about that, Will Brinson. Well, is there a general vibe out there, and or do you just have a guess or a perspective on what you think Tom Brady's plans are if we're all wrong, if I'm certainly wrong, and the Bucs win this thing, and at 43 he's a Super Bowl champion? Does it feel certain he's returning, or do you have a sense this could be it?
Oh, I think he's coming back. Win or lose, I think he comes back because, you know, he got here, and it took, you know, it took three road playoff games to pull it off, but he got here. It wasn't you know, I mean, given all that, everything that went on in the world and, you know, in terms of preparing for the football season and executing the football season, like, it feels kind of effortless that Tom Brady ended up in the Super Bowl again. Maybe it was inevitable. I just can't imagine. He played too well. You know, like, anybody who thinks that Tom Brady is, you know, declining just didn't watch the Bucs this year. I mean, certainly he had his moments where he wasn't perfect and, you know, he had plenty of interceptions this year relative to maybe a typical Tom Brady season, or at least it felt like it. But we've seen, you know, multiple quarterbacks, Peyton Manning, Ben Roethlisberger, Andrew Luck, Carson Palmer, all have their highest turnover rate of their careers in the first year with Bruce Arians, and then really had like some of the best years of their careers in the second year with Bruce Arians. And so I would anticipate that Tom Brady, you know, sees this, that's been sold to him, that the second year in a Bruce Arians system, you can really start to, you know, put up some obscene numbers and you sort of get dialed in on what he wants to do. And that, you know, that two-year contract was a legitimate two-year contract and might end up being a four-year contract. I think Brady's playing too well to walk off, to sail off. And the fact that he's gotten this close and knows that he is capable of getting another Super Bowl just by virtue of being in it, I think you'll want to keep coming back and keep tacking on to that legacy.
Brinson, what is your reaction, having had a little time to ruminate on it, on Stafford for Goff and the attached parts?
I like the deal for both parties in the sense that, you know, the Lions got some future first round picks, and they got a guy in Jared Goff who's kind of a perfect bridge quarterback, right? You know, you might not. I mean, like, Quintez Cephas is his top wide receiver, so I don't know if he's going to go in there and win 10 games with the Lions or anything like that. But they don't, you know, they aren't in a situation where they have to go out and try to, you know, have to draft the first available quarterback or have to overpay for somebody in free agency. They've got a guy who's still young, has played at a high level. You know, was the guy who's the new GM, Holmes in Detroit, pounded the table for him in LA, and so Dan Campbell likes him. So I mean, I think that was a nice move to me to be able to solidify that position while also getting basically paid to take on a ton of salary in the form of Jared Goff's contract. And then for the Rams, look, I think the Rams have messed up twice now by giving out contracts to Todd Gurley and Jared Goff. And they should be criticized for that. I mean, those were mistake contracts that they gave out too early. One, to a player in a position where you just shouldn't do that, even as good as he was. And then two, to the, you know, you just misread the situation with Goff somehow. I don't really know how, but they did. Having said that, you got to give Les Snead and Sean McVay credit for getting out of those mistakes, like cutting bait earlier rather than trying to force it for an extra year. And in doing so, they go out and get a guy in Matthew Stafford who, in my opinion, the way that he works rolling out on on bootlegs, on play action. The Rams were third highest in play action last year, and Stafford's much more athletic than Goff, has a much better deep arm. They sort of lost their explosive plays over the past 2 years. And so I think Stafford's a perfect fit. And, you know, you give up two first-round picks. That's a lot for him. But we've seen how the Rams are willing to shove all in on this core nucleus they've got, and they're not afraid to make hay using second- and third-round picks and to use those first-round picks to acquire veterans. So I think it's a good deal for both parties. Ultimately, at the end of the day, if the Rams want to, quote, win the trade, they're going to have to make a really deep playoff run. Otherwise, it's sort of like, did you give up all of that for nothing?
Will Brinson here on CBS Sports Radio's Writer Than You. I'm Bill Ryder. So two firsts, a third, Jared Goff. What does the price tag look like for Deshaun Watson if we got to a point where that actually happened, where a Deshaun Watson trade was something that was going to take place?
I mean, I think it's got to be three firsts, right? I don't see how. I think you could get to a place where it's not three firsts if you can, like it would need to be the Jets or the Dolphins. You were talking about a high pick, and it's two firsts, like a first this year, a first next year, a second this year, a second next year, and a player, right? And that's why I think the Jets and the Dolphins are ultimately the two teams that make the most sense. I wouldn't count out the Panthers either. I do think that they'll be, they were aggressive in the pursuit of Matthew Stafford. So maybe they think their window is a little bit better than people around the league would perceive it. But, if they're aggressive about Matthew Stafford, I would expect them to be aggressive about Deshaun Watson, closer to home, certainly close to Clemson where he played college football. And, maybe their picks aren't as good, but I think they have a few more young players like a Brian Burns or a DJ Moore that they could give up if they wanted to make that move. But the Jets and Dolphins make the most sense because they have multiple firsts and because they have that young quarterback that they can send back. And I think if you're the Texans, even if the general person judging the trade doesn't like Tua, doesn't like Sam Darnold, the Texans can at least sell it as, all right, look, this was in, Deshaun Watson was inconsolable. It was, we could not bridge the gap on what the two sides wanted. Cal McNair's not selling the team. He's refusing to fire Jack Easterby. And so the only, recourse was to trade Deshaun Watson. We did that. We got a ton of picks. And we got this young quarterback who we were very high on in the draft and still believe has a great future. And there is some upside there to Darnold or Tua, I think, that maybe might be a little bit unrealized. So you do that with the picks. It's possible you come out of the trade a winner. I think that's sort of the package that you got to consider when you think about a Watson deal.
Will Brinson, we've seen this in the NBA. In the NFL, if Deshaun Watson decides he's intractable and he doesn't want to be a Texan, what does that look like? Is there a historical comparison I'm missing for a guy that's in the league already, that's had this kind of success, that allows him, that leads you to believe allows him to successfully force his way out if the Texans say, No, we're good. We want you here.
Yeah, there's really not, Bill. I joked about it, but I think it's a joke so much as reality. Like, Deshaun Watson needs to pull a James Harden. Get fat this offseason. Show up fat to work. You show up fat to work, and you're like, what's going on? You're like, I don't know, man. Just love, just eating Twinkies, whatever. No big deal. Like, you show up with a big vat of buttered popcorn or I don't know. Find a way to get fat and then get really skinny again right after that, like James Harden. Maybe you can get shipped out of Houston. And there's really not a precedent for it. I mean, you don't see a quarterback, a franchise quarterback, the most important position in all of sports, a guy who is drafted with a first-round pick and really two first-round picks invested in him because they traded off, get a new contract, and then a year later demand to be traded and just refuse to play for the team who you signed the contract with. Now, it's a different world, I think, than it certainly was 10 years ago, just in terms of superstars being able to demand trades. But the quarterback position and an elite quarterback is just such a valuable commodity that you can see why Nick Caserio, who just took this job, is like, no, I'm not trading him. I mean, you are setting yourself up for some failure if you're Caserio and you trade him, because if Watson is awesome anywhere else, I mean, you could lose the fan base completely by trading Deshaun Watson, and you bring back Sam Darnold or Tua, as I mentioned, I mean, I think you can kind of sell it to them, but there's going to be some angry people if this deal goes down. So I'm with you. I don't think there's historical precedent at all for what we're seeing with Watson. And, you know, it'll be fascinating because of the way that the CBA is structured and the way that they reworked it, you know, he's going to lose a ton of money that the Texans can't just give back to him if he suddenly decides to show up, you know, at the beginning of training camp or something like that. You know what I mean? Like, or at the beginning of week one. It will really test his principles. It will test his bank account, and it will test his moral fortitude. But if he's willing to sacrifice that money, then I think the Texans might have their hand forced.
All right, well, Brinson, on the way out, give us your the favorite question from radio hosts like myself to experts like yourself. Give me the score and prediction for Super Bowl 55.
I like that it's early enough in the week, Bill, where we don't have to do a full Super Bowl analysis. You know, you got to bleed this sucker dry, right?
It's true.
yeah, it's like Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. So you turn the page and you really start milking that cow. I think the Chiefs are going to win and cover. And I mean, I'm kind of with you. I don't know that it's going to be 15. That's so tough because you're talking three scores where. You're dodging the 5-1. I don't hate it, as you point out, but you're dodging a bunch of Brady second half, a bunch of fourth quarter Tom Brady possessions. I'm going to say 31-20. Ooh. Chiefs win. So Chiefs win by double digits. Maybe it's. I think it stays under. I just think Kansas City is. I really do believe we might be underrating Kansas City just because of how they sleepwalk through the end of the year, and then Mahomes' injury against Cleveland. That team we saw against Buffalo, man, now they got 2 weeks to prepare, and they already roasted this defense once. I think we could see Mahomes come out scorching.
I like that in a big way. Will Brinson, you are the man. We will be listening to the Pick 6 podcast, following you on Twitter, at Will Brinson, watching you at CBS Sports HQ, reading you at CBSSports.com, and wishing you all the rest you deserve when this NFL season comes to an end. Thank you, dude.
All right, Bill. Take it easy, buddy.
Hey, buddy. Will Brinson on the show. All right, a very special phone call. And some pointed questions from the boss for Andrew Bokish next here on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
All right, welcome back into the show on this very unusual, different kind of vibe Super Bowl week. Bill Ryder with you. Thanks for hanging out. Remember, this Sunday, join us at CBS for the biggest event of the year. Super Bowl 55, the best quarterback in the game, Patrick Mahomes. Leads those defending champion Kansas City Chiefs against legendary quarterback Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Coverage begins at 2 Eastern, that's 11 a.m. Pacific, with JB and the guys on the Super Bowl today, all leading up to kickoff at 6 Eastern, 3 Pacific this Sunday. Super Bowl 55 is on CBS. Yet again, two quarterbacks, Mahomes and Brady, great enough, good enough, talented enough. I want to say to lift your team. These are good football teams with really impressive rosters and excellent coaches, but it is not a coincidence these guys are here again in each of their cases. Brady, my God, can't even keep track of how many times. Three first-round picks. You just heard Will Brinson bring this up. And a young quarterback for Deshaun Watson is a lot. I'm doing it. I think I'm doing it. If I'm most of these organizations. Certainly the Dolphins. I think the Dolphins are put together in a way where that's a really good football team. And maybe you try to go the Rams route and draft really effectively for need and immediacy in the second and third rounds over what will be a long stretch without first-round picks. Phone number here, 855-2124-CBS. So, I don't like change. Just by name, I'm in a different studio today here in L.A. because the studio I normally use is being used for a media tour, which is fine. I'm a weirdo. I hate change. I eat the same thing for breakfast when I go to restaurants. I order the same thing when I go to my favorite restaurant in Manhattan Beach for dinner. And that certainly applies to bosses and excellent bosses. And Mark Chernoff, who's, I think it's fair to say, legendary. He is legendary program director at WFAN in New York City and the boss here as well at CBS Sports Radio. It was announced yesterday. We'll be leaving the network, retiring, as I understand it. In a few months. I don't really understand the details of the timeline, but it's a big change. And Bogus, you've worked for Chernoff for however long the network's been around.
Exactly. This year eight, year nine, I've lost count. But yeah, he was obviously here and let me come over back then.
Very unique guy, very kind, smart guy, very direct, has a unique speaking style. And this isn't Tom Benedetto, by the way. This isn't Tom doing a Chernoff. Mark Chernoff apparently on the line right now.
Really, Bill? Really? This is what we're going to do today? I mean, look, I appreciate that you're paying your respects, but, like, is this really – is this what the audience wants to hear today about me? I don't know.
I mean, it is Super Bowl week, Mark. We'll keep it short. I understand you had some things you want to talk to Bogus about, and I figured we could do it on the show.
Well, I mean, you know, Bogus, he's enthusiastic. We always appreciate it. But, you know, the input, it's appreciated, but it's not necessary on Bill's show. I mean, we know you have big ideas, but it is Bill's show. So you can stop with that now that, you know, things are winding down for me. And the producers, too. I mean, like, I retire, and that day they just stop coming in for work. So everything's
true.
Falling apart.
Nobody. Wait, so Mark, Bogus sends you the emails about my shortcomings as well?
Yeah, I believe I'm blind CC'd on it.
Okay.
I would rather not be, though.
I can fix that, Mark. My apologies. And best of luck in your next endeavor.
I appreciate that, Andrew.
That's an excellent Mark Chernoff. That's a very Bogus. That I feel like yeah, you're done. Yeah, you can stop.
Yeah, don't bother coming back
sorry,
in.
Mark. I'm sorry.
How
Mark,
does that
compare? Everything. You've been wonderful.
How does that compare to Gio's? I haven't heard Gio's on WFAN. Bogus, how would
not
you? How would?
Well, I think, and I have not heard Gio's in a while, but I feel like Gio, when they do it, they're usually making fun of Mark. So Gio's might have a meaner tint to it. But I think, so Tom, that was like a legitimate artistic, like for the screen representation of Chernoff.
I'll take it. That's a buy.
Man, it is. It's such a, man, it's such a bummer. It's such a bummer. I'm so bummed. I mean, I've worked it. I was thinking about this. I've worked at like 12 newspapers. I've worked at two websites, a television network, and three different radio spots. I've had some terrible bosses. I mean, I've had some just terrible bosses and some bosses that were terrible people. And Mark Chernoff is both a great boss and a great guy. I'm going to miss him a ton. It's just, I know change is part of the deal, but it's just, you know, not the most welcome news that I've ever seen. Even though it, you know, I understand people retire, and certainly Bogus, my goal is to retire. I mean, what's your retirement date? Like, when do you think we're the same age, right? Like 42, 43. What are you thinking?
Yeah, I mean, 45, worst case scenario. If I can't cash out by 45, I'm doing something wrong.
You wouldn't take a punch to the face from LeBron James to actually be able to retire at 45.
I mean, I understand the. The financial windfall of that, but I do have a fear of 6'8", 250 LeBron maiming me, and therefore, from my hospital bed, I would watch my family spend and enjoy the millions that we got from LeBron's aggravated assault. And, like, I don't know how that works in a cost-benefit analysis. So, yeah, maybe a different way of winning my riches is a better way to go here. Like, can I win the lotto? Can I bet on the Chiefs? Minus 13?
I don't know. Can you? I mean, it feels
like...
Can I
buy GameStop? GameStop, that's a little thing? What's next?
I asked my brother, who's going to Vegas, what would be the most likely path for me to get $500,000, just easy money, and he said the greatest craps run ever. So I don't think it's easy to do. I just don't think it's easy to come up with that kind of cash outside of, you know, inventing some website. But I feel like that ship has kind of sailed, right?
Yeah, and I'm not creative enough. I'm not going to think of anything new that would all of a sudden... change my life. So that's not possible. I don't even know how to play craps, so that's off the table too.
I'm terrible at craps, but it's the most fun game ever. I don't know how to play it either. I just follow my brother's.
How
game.
Does it even work? Yeah. What is craps? I don't even know.
I mean, I don't entirely understand it. I just know that I bet the hard ways because it's a sucker bet, but when they hit you feel so alive. The first time I played, first time I ever played was 4 years ago, the Cosmo in Vegas. I did minimum bets. I followed my brother. And the next thing I knew, they gave me like $1,200. My brother won 10 grand. I don't even know what I had a 45-minute roll. I don't even know anything about craps. And the whole weekend, throughout Vegas and mostly the Cosmo, I would be walking through the casino. We were there for like 4 days, and people would scream, Billy! Because I guess a bunch of people want a bunch of money. And I'm like, oh, this is so easy. And then I lost like all the money. Like, I'd roll and like I'd be done. Like, wait, I thought I got to roll for 45 minutes. Like, no, that was beginner's luck. You're done. Give us your cash. That's what I know about craps.
Yeah.
That's my story.
There's a dice roll, and you got to blow on the dice before you roll them. That's all I know about craps.
Tom, how much money would you would you take $1 million to take a full-on punch from LeBron James?
Yes. I don't have children to worry about, so I think that's part of the equation for Bogus. But, yes, I would.
Yeah. I would too.
And my fiance is giving me double thumbs up too. Like, I have permission to take.
She's like, do it. Yeah, $1 million. We'll do 100K discount.
Exactly.
Punch Tom in the face discount.
We'll take a 20.
I saw the thumbs. I thought the thumbs were referencing no kids. Like, yeah, no kids.
You might be able
we're
to
free,
crowdsource.
Take a punch.
This. If you made yourself into a big enough villain, I bet you could crowdsource. I bet you could raise the money. Right? Like half the money goes to a charity, half the money goes to you. If you raise $2 million, I bet LeBron would agree. We can make.
Oh, boy.
Let's try to make this happen.
This just suddenly got real.
Bogus looks horrified, but I don't know if it's because he doesn't like the idea or deep down he's like, why didn't I agree to this?
No, I'm having no regrets about not agreeing to the LeBron punch. I'm just thinking of all the LeBron handlers that would prevent him from punching D-Ben for
money. I was just about to say, what degree of LeBron power do you think he would use in this instance? Like, you think he'd even give me a half punch?
I think it depends who you are, right? I think it depends. I don't think he'd hurt you too
I'm
bad.
Nobody,
time.
So.
You'll be fine, buddy. Don't worry about it. Like, what about Coach K? I mean, like,
what about
five punches from Coach
Maybe.
K for Bogus over here? Your buddy.
Oh, yeah. That sounds
I think
like
Coach K
deal.
Could hurt you.
There's
a mean streak in there. Yeah.
I mean, but he's older. He's above 70.
Isn't he like an army guy back in the day? Isn't that like part
Yeah, but again, he's over 70. Like, he knows how to punch me, but can he actually physically do it anymore?
So you would, for 100 grand, you'd let Coach K punch you five times as hard as he could?
Maybe 250.
The problem is that if you were a student journalist, you'd be willing to do it for free. So it's kind of hard to.
I'll shave my beard. I'll look young enough for that.
Having done a whole segment on Mark Chernoff and punching, getting punched in the face, which will probably result in a call to me from Mark Chernoff threatening to punch me in the face, would you like to do an update?
Yeah, no punches in this one last night. It was LeBron versus the Hawks and LeBron versus the Carlos family. LeBron scoring 12 of his 21 points in the fourth quarter for a 107-99 win over the Hawks. And while doing that, he got into a verbal spat with Chris and Juliana Carlos, who were sitting courtside. The men had words, then Mrs. Carlos jumped in and defended her husband. Part of the problem with that, she pulled her mask down to do so.
I wasn't close enough to her. I don't think any of my teammates was close enough to him. Maybe a couple of rests, maybe. So I hope they're okay. But you know, safety.
The
first.
Couple was eventually asked to leave. The game resumed, and again, the Lakers won 107-99. Elsewhere in the NBA, the Grizzlies smacked the Spurs 133-102 for a 7-game win streak. It's a 6-game losing streak now for the Mavericks.
8 seconds to go. Paul on the dribble. Gets around Kleba to the baseline. Now back to Booker. Right wing three. On the way. Good for Devin Booker. He canned it with 1.5 seconds to go. The Suns take the 1-point lead. 109-108.
Suns radio. Devin Booker's three giving Phoenix a 109-108 win. The NFL says there'll be 25,000 people in Raymond James Stadium on Sunday, as well as 30,000 cutouts. And the Jaguars are reportedly hiring Brian Schottenheimer as passing game coordinator. 5 female media members tell The Athletic that Angels pitching coach Mickey Callaway sent them unsolicited and lewd messages. The allegations go back the last 5 years when Callaway was also the Mets manager and Cleveland pitching coach. Callaway declined full comment to the website. The Angels said they'll investigate, and the other two teams say they were unaware of any allegations until now. The Rockies and Cardinals completed the Nolan Arenado trade last night. He and Cash go to St. Louis. Lefty Austin Gomber and 4 minor leaguers go to Colorado. Arenado now has opt-outs after 2022 and 23, as well as adding 2027 to his current deal. Tonight's Islanders-Sabres game postponed because of COVID protocols. Buffalo couldn't travel yesterday to New York because of snow. Arriving today doesn't allow for the proper COVID screening. No makeup date announced yet. Last night, the Canadiens stopped the Canucks' 4-game win streak, 6-2. Tampa Bay beat Nashville 5-2, and the Rangers 3. The Penguins won. And Roger Federer plans on playing next month in Doha, eventually ramping up for Wimbledon, the Olympics, and the U.S. Open. Federer hasn't played since last January because of 2 right knee surgeries. Bill, back to you.
Andrew Bogish. Thank you, buddy. Bogish on Twitter at Andrew Bogish. If you want to follow him or negotiate privately a punch for cash exchange. Phone number here, 855-212-4CBS. Buy or sell. A bunch of the topics from sports we have not hit yet. Next on CBS Sports Radio.
What side will Bill take on the biggest issues in the world of sports? It's time for today's edition of Buy or Sell on Writer Than You.
What up, Thomas?
This is kind of different.
By phone. Look at this.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, first.
Buy or sell, Tom, working from home?
I'll give it a buy, actually.
Buy.
A lot to worry about and getting Connor up to speed, but he did a great job. So considering the fact that we've made it here to the end segment without any major waves, I think that's worthy of a buy.
Connor Green. Let's give Connor Green a buy, too.
Buy.
Give himself a buy. Connor
Way
Green.
Way to go, Connor. Thank you, bud.
No problem, guys.
All right, let's do some topics. Packers head coach Matt LaFleur spoke to the media and remained adamant yesterday about a lot of things, actually, including his decision to kick a field goal at the end of the Packers' NFC Championship loss to the Bucks, but especially if the team is planning on having Aaron Rodgers around next season.
Is that a trick question? Absolutely. There's no doubt about it. I mean, you're talking about the guy that is going to win the MVP of the league. Like, we're not in this position without him. So I couldn't be happier with just not only his performance, but how he led our football team.
Buy or sell, whatever is ailing the Packers internally can be fixed in one offseason.
I'm going to sell that. I'm going to sell.
Sell.
In part because one of Rodgers' former offensive linemen went on, I think, radio.com actually this week and said that he thinks that A-Rod is enacting with the drama some revenge on the Packers for drafting a quarterback. And at first blush, that seems, if that's true, pretty petulant and pretty ridiculous. But the point that was made, I think it's an interesting one, is that the Packers have never just gone all in on a single season and just said, you know what, every draft pick, every asset, every move is going to be calibrated not to the future, but to just this year going for it. I think he's fed up. I think he's frustrated. I think he's not in a place where he's trusting that organization. No, I think the only thing that's going to fix things is if next time around LaFleur doesn't kick a field goal and Aaron Rodgers, to be fair, is able to actually get the ball in the end zone in a fourth quarter if they get that close again.
Earlier in the hour, we talked to Will Brinson a little bit about Tua Tagovailoa. He did some media yesterday, actually, including on SiriusXM's Mad Dog Radio, where he spoke about whether or not he thinks he'll still be in Miami for next season.
In my mind and in my heart, I'd like to hope so, but you know, for me, with the way things went last year, you know, you always got to come out wanting to prove yourself to be better and to you know, want to do better. My job for the organization is to help, you know, our team win games. And for me, that's what I got to do a better job with. You know, when I was in, we lost a couple, you know, and so just got to eliminate those losses and hopefully, you know, jot them to the other side of the board as wins.
Buy or sell, the experience of this offseason will ultimately be damaging to Tua, whether he is traded or not.
Man, what an impressive dude. I like him. So I'm going to sell that, Tom. I'm going to go with a little,
sell.
Little Tua optimism. I do think, and we've discussed, that I think Brian Flores put him in a terrible position. And whatever bizarro power struggle existed between Miami's front office and the coaching staff, the former wanting him to play, the latter clearly not being on board, and Fitzmagic, Fitztragic, in and out, that's not good for the development or confidence of a young quarterback. But Tua seems to me, what we saw at Alabama, what we heard there, his ability, his maturity, his ability to persevere, I think he's got that rare quality that will not allow his confidence and therefore his development and future to be trampled by what was a really unfortunate way for him to be introduced to the NFL. I'm holding out hope for Tua.
Dustin Pedroia's retirement was announced during the show yesterday, and later in the afternoon he held a Zoom press conference to convey his appreciation for his career in Boston.
The Boston Red Sox to me is, I mean, I can't even explain how much it means to me. It means everything. You know, I started my family there. My kids were born in Boston. you know, every day I woke up looking to find a way to help our team win a baseball game. And I got to do it in front of the best fans in the best city.
24 hours ago, I asked you about his place in the Red Sox pantheon, but what about his place in the history of the game? His numbers place him basically just below the border of Hall of Fame production from a second baseman, but Pedroia's career was unique in that he won a Rookie of the Year, an AL MVP, collected four Gold Gloves, and won two World Series with, of course, the Boston Red Sox after all. Buy or sell, Dustin Pedroia belongs in the Hall of Fame.
So I am, man, it's a good question. I'm going to sell that. I love him as a player.
Sell.
But I am a believer, Tom, that the Hall of Fame is too crowded with players who should be on the other side of the line. Just, can I give you a quick comparison here?
Please.
Mark Grace, who I love, in his career had a number of Gold Gloves. He had 600 more hits. He had a 4-point higher batting average of 303 than Pedroia's 209. He hit more home runs. He scored more runs. He drove in more guys. I mean, Mark Grace had a markedly better career than Pedroia statistically. And I know Gracie didn't have a postseason success because he played for the Cubs, but I think Pedroia is not a Hall of Famer. And I think if he weren't a Red Sox he's not a Yankee, but outside of being a Red Sox or a Yankee, I don't think guys like that, regardless of some of the things you mentioned, would get consideration. He has the exact same career in St. Louis or with the White Sox or with the Angels. I don't think we're even having this conversation.
Major League Baseball will start on time and play a full season, according to Jeff Passan, with no significant rules changes apparently applied for this year, at least to this point. Camps will open on February 17th as planned. Opening day will move forward on April 1st as planned. Buy or sell this news as an all-around win for baseball fans?
I'll buy it, sure.
Buy.
I mean, as long as this leads to a complete season and doesn't interfere, and certainly the time of year and the trend that we're going in this country lends itself to some optimism, which we all need. Absolutely. And I think we've all seen since sports came back the way in which, while they're certainly put in perspective given the much weightier and heavier things we're dealing with as a country and a world, it is really nice to just have sports on. My son last night came home like, "Daddy, what's the sports we're going to watch?" We watched a bunch of YouTube clips of soccer and NFL and NBA stuff before we got into NBA games, because the NBA games he wasn't into. Sports are a balm sometimes. We need it more than ever, and I think it'll be great to have baseball back when it's supposed to be.
The Cavaliers and the Hornets both now have 10 wins after both teams won last night, meaning the two teams are now tied for 7th place in the East. The Hornets have now won 3 in a row, while the Cavs continue to play some of the best defense in the Eastern Conference, trailing only the Knicks in points per game allowed so far this season. Buy or sell, either of these teams will hold on to a top 8 spot through the season.
I mean, you'd have to... That means that both the Heat and the Raptors...
Those are the two, yep.
Yeah. You know what? I'm going to buy it, actually. Here's why.
Buy.
We're 21 games into a season. That tends to be when you feel like you can make legitimate assessments about teams, and I think the legitimate assessment about the Raptors and the Heat is that they are underwhelming. And something, Tom, you and I talked about a lot on the air at the start of the season was, as I called GMs and executives and sources around the NBA, everybody stressed there was going to be chaos from COVID, and that teams that had high expectations, there would be some that shockingly failed, and teams that had really low expectations, there would be some that shockingly succeeded. And we're seeing that reflected in what you're talking about in the Eastern Conference. I was told this would happen. It's happening. I think it's real.
As Andrew Bogut mentioned a couple times this morning, Roger Federer has told the Swiss media outlet that he will return after more than a year off the court in March in preparation for a 2021 schedule that could potentially include Wimbledon, the Olympics, and the U.S. Open. He is currently tied with Rafael Nadal for 20 majors. Buy or sell, Federer has another major in him to keep pace in 2021.
Buy 100%.
Buy.
I'm done doubting these dudes. I've seen Tom Brady. I see what LeBron James is doing. And Federer, but for a brutal collapse against Djokovic at, I don't even remember if it was Wimbledon or whatever it was last time around when those guys faced each other in that men's final, should have won, could have won, had a bunch of match points. Yeah, he's, at least for the moment, I think he's the GOAT. I think he's got one more in him, just like Brady does.
It's so amazing, just like Brady, that it's still going. We got to really cherish it because it is incredible. These guys are still hunting for majors all these years later. We will end by heading to Paris. Brazilian soccer star Neymar turns 29 later this week, but any hope that his lavish partying Parisian lifestyle will calm seem to be pipe dreams after his latest comments that, quote, he will never stop doing it. The PSG forward claims that the partying doesn't impact his game and, if anything, helps because it allows him to blow off steam. By yourself, it's believable that the partying helps Neymar's play.
You know, I would normally have sold this, Tom, but my life experience, I'm going to buy this, and here's why.
Buy.
I tend to be a guy that works really hard, goes to sleep on time, gets up early, but you and I have discussed, Tom, and you worked on that show when Stuart Kovacs was the executive producer. I mean, he partied all the
That's
time.
Right.
He was at
what
the clubs. Yeah, 4 or 5 days a week, and while he did call in 6, 7 days in advance sometimes, he came to work. He made it, right? Like he did. I mean, he did a good job. He did right? He's a great producer. And I don't even know. I mean, I don't even remember bags under his eyes. He's a low key guy. Yeah. You wouldn't be able to tell if he was asleep. But like, I don't think the club didn't affect him at all. Do you?
Yeah, no, separate spheres. He kept them. He stayed professional at work. He went after it after work. He was able to do it. And he also cited something like that. You know, he's got a lot of stress pent up that he needs to let off. That's why I got into the motorcycles and the leather too. You know, it's all part of this edge that he has to work off so that he can stay professional when he's on the job.
I mean, it really, he was a human mullet. I mean, he was so professional up front at work, but it was party time when he left the office. I mean, Stuart Kovacs, the human mullet. I mean, that guy, and I'll say this about Neymar too. I don't find Neymar to be particularly likable. I'm assuming, Tom, you don't either. I don't think he's a very likable guy. I don't want to speak
for
you.
He is certainly not. No, he is certainly not.
This is the most likable thing I can remember because I do respect the honesty. Even if it's based in a level of obnoxiousness or not understanding his massive talent would probably be more massive if he didn't pull a Stuart Kovacs. I like guys that tell the truth, right?
And it's also worth saying that the partying is nothing new and that people like your boy Messi still vouch for him even though they've been teammates with him while he's lived this lifestyle. So I think that does mean something.
It's interesting because if you're in shape, if you perform, and the reality is that NBA players who play multiple times a night and Major League Baseball players, and I mean, that's the other thing. We don't talk about, I know we have to go, ball players party and drink like fish. I mean, they really do. It's not uncommon for ball players to come to the office, come to the ballpark hungover and play. And nobody talks about it. Nobody criticizes these guys. It's about what you can do on the field. Great work by Connor Green. Thank you, Connor, for filling in on the board. Thank you to Tom DiBenedetto, still doing the work, snowed in his home in Jersey. Thank you to Andrew Bogish and his deep contemplation of how much money he would require to take a punch in the face from someone like LeBron James. And thank you for listening. My name is Bill Ryder. The show is Ryder Than You. We appreciate you being here, and we hope you're back with us tomorrow here on CBS Sports Radio.